I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
How's it, guys? We're at Beautiful Bishops once again for another exciting episode of The Box Office. We're going to discuss the two major upsets from this weekend of Six Nations Rugby. Look back and look ahead to the final weekend of Six Nations. Jean de Villiers and Skalk Burger will be joining me on The Box Office, which is now open.
Did you see that thing I posted of Clive Woodward that said it's him that won the... He won England again. You see that one?
Yeah.
Because they read his article.
They read his article.
Can I have a beer, please?
Of course.
Yeah.
What's wrong? Why do you guys know beers?
I'll go with a beer today. Yeah, I can have one.
One hit? Beer? How's anxiety?
I've never seen a guy drink so much white wine like last week. Thursday.
How do you feel the next day?
No, it's fine.
At least 10 liters of wine.
That was day two.
You made it first day one.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, normal beers, eh?
No. I'm good for the
beer. Normal one.
Normal for two.
Is it? How come you can't? Yeah, it's just a bit of. Okay, that's fine. Leave it. Otherwise, you get too hot. I know that look in your eyes. I know that look, boy. Hey, talk to me. Why so?
No,
quiet?
We went big.
Oh, I can see. You even had time for a haircut.
Yeah, it's the rugby
Make
poles.
Make you feel
are
better
going,
about yourself.
The rugby poles are going in, boys.
There's a big rugby festival there next weekend, the long weekend.
Is it?
It could be good vibe, actually.
Yes, we play.
Like Mike Laos and Andrews, Bishops, and it's all the
other... None of the rugby schools.
Whoa. C division. B division.
That's harsh, eh?
The, my life team.
That's harsh. Skalk and Jean, welcome back to The Box Office.
Thank you very much, Shami.
Thank you very much,
A good weekend of Six Nations Rugby. It's alive again. It'll serve as 80 minutes is a long time in rugby. But first, let's talk about the hunting trip. Jean, I've noticed no beer for you, a lot of water. You're sipping on that water quite a lot.
No, but I mean, I've been sipping on the water on all the episodes. And a beer every now and then. Why am I nervous?
Why are you tapping your front foot?
The one-hit wonder did a double header.
That's incredible.
Thursday, and then Friday was no good.
No, it was an amazing couple of days. Saw some old friends. So we got
it wasn't a hunting trip.
It wasn't a hunting. No, but we
so
saw
you guys
some
went to
beautiful
the Karoo or Kalahari?
Kalahari.
Calorie.
You jumped in a bucky and you drank and that for 2 days and that was it?
No.
So explain to me the itinerary. How did it work?
No, we drove around.
In a bucky.
The second morning we were all having breakfast, cup of coffee. I saw John sneak off to the bar. He got to the bar. He got one of those Ready Mc gin and tonics and he downed it.
In the morning?
7:45 in the morning.
That's not true.
Mm? And I think by 6 o'clock that evening, that gin got him. The 10 litres of wine he drank in between that and going to bed had no effect, but that little gin got him.
And Skalk was just exercising all day. Yeah, he was doing nothing. It's beautiful.
Skalk, you're strictly a beer man.
Wine over lunch, straight beer, wine over lunch, a little brandy wine, but then straight on to the beers again to reset the equilibrium. It's important.
You managed 2 days.
Shimmy, I mean, have you ever been to the Kalahari?
No.
It's beautiful.
Okay.
It's like...
Do you remember it?
Of course, I remember everything. Okay. It's a couple of times now that we've gone, and it actually originated. So the owner of the farm, Louis van der Walt, 2 days before the World Cup final 2019. And we were having a Bryce Cock and myself at Farid Depriya's house. We were staying over with him. And Louis also came over and we were Brian. And he was telling us about how beautiful the Kalahari is. And I've never been to a farm there. So he said, no, we must go to his farm, whatever. Following morning, everything sorted. It was in the diary.
And that's now 6 trips ago.
Yeah, 7 trips ago.
Seven trips.
But 6 years ago, 5 years ago. And 15, 16 guys that goes, like a nice group, lots of rugby guys, other mates of ours. We even have our renter crowd, Zama, that's and it's a beautiful, you know, nature, just mates, some business deals were done.
Okay. Shimmy, I've got a question. Cape Town Cycle Tour. Rumor has it you were doing squats up Chapman's Peak with your bicycle wrapped around your shoulders. Talk to me. How does this work? Is cycling
first
not
of all,
enough?
I'd never send my... I don't have a training program.
Yeah.
I got my bike on the
you
Saturday.
You would never tell.
108 kilograms. Kilometers. I wish it was 108.
You're the bike.
I've never cramped so much in my life. So it was a long 5 hours? But it's done. Last year I did it with... Was it the year before I did it?
Well, yeah, yeah. We were... Me and Scalabritz and you. Yeah.
But that's 5 hours?
Yeah.
That's not bad, is it? No, well, for good. Me, that I don't think I won't be able to finish it.
No, you'll be able to finish it.
No, I won't.
Yeah, you'll
it's just how much suffering you're willing to take.
I don't like
suffering.
I'm going
to go to an event later on after that.
You couldn't sit down or stand up
on the couch. No. Bottle of wine, and that was me. I was finished. Done.
As Carl Caldier is motto for life after rugby.
What?
Which is very relevant to your story.
Which is okay.
So ask him what's his motto.
What's
no
your
pain.
Motto?
No pain. Is it?
I had a lot of pain. Yeah. I've never cramped like that. I promise you, I was sitting there and goes, Shimmy, get up. It's gone. I can't move.
Speaking to yourself.
It was embarrassing. So, right, you know where the car slide off at Chapman's Peak? I literally stopped there, sitting down, legs out, and guys, everyone cycling past. Shimmy, get up. Well, don't give up now. I'd love to get up, but I can't.
We just came out of a meeting where a very avid cyclist, he was on his mountain bike, and he said he got to the bottle of Sekerbos and he realized he burned too many matches up to that point.
Yeah.
And he started cramping everywhere. So he also got off his bike, tried to walk, made it worse. So eventually he said he got a way of how to just go slowly, like heels down. He says the next moment, quite a strong cyclist come down, but he was on a tandem. But he checks the guy out. And he says right behind him is his son. His son is half asleep, not pedaling. And he goes, okay, well, he's obviously a very strong cyclist. And as he went past, he saw his hand on his wife's back, pushing his wife up, and they were coming past him. And he was like, all right, okay, maybe I'm not a very good cyclist anymore.
Yeah. No, it was good fun, but...
But it's grueling.
Definitely train for it.
Yeah, it's grueling. Yeah, it must be grueling easy. If you don't train for it.
No.
Yeah.
My bike was delivered on Saturday afternoon.
Shame.
Literally came the bike on...
Is the bike all right,
on the car. Yeah, the bike's okay. The frame survived. Wheel survived. Everything else.
I've been on two bike rides with Shimmy. One, he had a flat tire, so we couldn't help him. The other one, he just snapped his chain. And we left him.
No, I'll tell you the first one. Okay, this is a rugby show. The first one, everyone, we're going to take it easy. We're going to the blockhouse. Everyone, it was myself, John, Justin Malk, you. I can't remember who else.
Yeah.
Chatting, we're going to take it easy. Within 5 minutes, John, these guys are about 2Ks ahead of me. So I might as well just have gone by myself.
Yeah.
I'm not enjoying this. I'm trying to catch up to them. My bike flipping brakes. I walk it down, call an Uber. Uber guy says, no, you're going to make my car dirty. So we negotiated a bit more. I gave him money for the car wash, dropped me off at home. And I packed my bike away once again.
You got up that morning,
yeah,
and you decided to go for a bike ride, and it ended that story,
yeah,
and it ended up with you not going for a bike ride with your mates, but Ubering back with your bike in the back of an Uber.
Yeah, I still a lot of use Uber then.
That's why it fell.
No, let's not bring that story back up, guys. Let's talk about the rugby now, guys. England versus Ireland.
It's coming home, boys, isn't it?
It's coming home now, eh?
Clive Woodward, eh?
Yeah.
Jeez,
he said it's him.
Because they read the article that he wrote. To start fast. Like
they
the previous
fast.
Weekend.
They started very fast. They were physical.
Jeez, guys. I mean, it wasn't part of my prediction. I was going Ireland all day. But, I mean, a lot of drama in the Six Nations this weekend, eh? Like, that was proper game.
But, I mean, credit to England.
Yeah.
In a way, they were able to put Ireland under pressure defensively. So again, their defensive system wasn't perfect.
Yeah.
But I mean, it wasn't as if Ireland blew them apart as we thought would happen with
yeah, James Lowe's first try. There's definitely sometimes still a disconnect. Yes, Ollie Lawrence and Slade. Yeah,
but what it felt to me was, you know, this weekend, and we've seen it a lot from the box as well, where you get beaten on the outside, but your work rate and the guy's ability on the inside to work hard and scramble, eventually you make the tackle and you stop the defense. And they were doing that on the weekend. So that on the one side for me, and England's attack
was amazing. I was about to say exactly the
physical
same.
Physical and fast.
But like their first two tries came from kick receipts, long kicks. Yeah, James Lowe, long kick. Gibson Park, long kick. The first one was outstanding, like quick little hands, just straight running. Ollie Lawrence's one. And the second one, a couple of phases to right, and then the sweep, a little offload by, can't blank on his name now, flanker with a little scoop around the back to Itoje and Furbank finishing it. Underhill, sorry.
Underhill.
He's got the scrump hat on now. Yeah, that confuses me every time.
Yeah.
And then again, Ben Ull.
Scrump hat.
And then Ben Ull.
Again. What a game.
Proper.
Huge game.
What a game. That was next level.
But, sorry, before we speak about him, because I think he deserves more than just a quick mention. But Borthwick's selections, you know, going with Furbank, even last week or the previous game.
Against Scotland.
You know, and Furbank was really good. I mean, Freddie Stewart's been very good for England.
Furbank can create from the back.
But he can create. Yeah. So it's a totally different mindset. So credit to them for their selections. Ben, I don't know, did you listen to his post-match?
No.
Yeah.
About all what the media have been saying.
Yeah, exactly. Saying that we're the worst team ever. And he was quite emotional about, you know, what they were playing for. You know, Jamie George, to me, is also kind of a captain that brings
He's a good guy.
People like him. You want to play for him. His mother passing away. And that was kind of instrumental also in them having more meaning in the game. And then saying, and it's true so many times, you don't get the results, but you don't see what a team does in the background. Yeah. You don't see half of the work that they put in during the week. And he was just kind of emphasizing that. And again, you know, we sit here, we make comments, but, you know, guys take it personally. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, and you could see they took it personally in some of the comments that's been made about the team. And they certainly showed up on the day.
But, John, in saying that, though, we've seen Springbok teams there. You know, that one big Tri-Nations game that, you know, South African team, you know, that lose you badly. But this was years ago where they always had that one big performance at home when the media's against you. Everybody says how crap we are,
etc.
We've all seen
Springbok. You come up against the All Blacks and
you turn them over. No one expects that. Media as motivation. Is that the right thing? Or was this the gear shift in England from conservative to attacking? Because they're two different ways. You know, you can use the media won't motivate you every single weekend.
No, motivation by virtue of media is not sustainable.
Yeah,
that can get you up, you know, once, twice, maybe in a season, but that's not something that you build confidence from. It's not something that you can apply every single weekend because, you know, you just don't win competitions like that.
Yeah.
And also, let's just be frank. It's not as if Ireland is now suddenly a bad team and England is the world champions. You know, it's one game. And I think it's important to look at it, to have perspective in terms of the performance. It was a good performance on the day, better than Ireland on the day. But I mean,
deserved winners.
Still a long way to go.
Emotion goes a long way, but emotion without the detail and the skill set and the preparation and actually knowing what you're doing on the field is you run out of the emotion parts. You can be competitive for a set amount of time, or maybe once every 6 weeks it comes through for you. You know, this England side played beautiful rugby. I think if you're the Irish team, the thing that you will worry about is, like, you see it with Leinster, you see it in World Cup quarterfinals. I mean, this was a big game regarding the Grand Slam. You know, how many times they come up short. It's only just, but they come up short in the big ones. In the big games.
The ones that count.
And the ones that count are the ones you remember the most. I mean, they're a fantastic side, and all of us pitch up here. We want to see Leinster and Ireland play the way they do. But there is definitely something to be said in the big games for being put under the pump, put under the pressure. Can they respond to that? You know, do they have the skill set and the tools or the resilience sometimes to win ugly? And I think they do. It's just unfortunately at the moment they're losing games that has got a big effect on their trophy cabinet.
I thought, sorry, Shem, the...
Don't apologize.
Let's go.
I almost thought England almost. Can you remember when Elliot Daly, when they exited and they went wide? Yeah. There was like a couple of minutes left. Elliot Daly wanted to kick through and it got charged down. I thought, well, that's the moment where they almost kind of could have lost the game. But the point I'm trying to make, the what surprised me about England was the fact that even though they made mistakes towards the end, they were able to get it over the line.
Well, that last attacking set was next level.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, and that's maybe the answer, is that you're sometimes so forced to go conservative.
Yeah.
Okay, we want to close the game now and go conservative, where the space sometimes is where you need to go and take it wide.
Just have the freedom to have a go.
Yeah.
But
far easier said than that.
Yeah, looking at Ireland now, is a performance like this is what's holding them back from being a great team, Scala? Because this Irish team has, you know, you talk about the win in New Zealand. That will be the first Irish team to ever do that. I mean, you go back to when Joe Schmidt came here with the Irish team, they almost won the series in South Africa.
2016.
This we've seen before from the Irish team. You mentioned it now with Leinster.
Yeah.
Is this what's holding them back?
I think the worry in all these games, they've got a similar trend. Yeah. Most of these games. I think the one that stands out, obviously, is when La Rochelle play Leinster.
Series against Leinster.
It's a similar, they sort of get suffocated and they can't play their style and they get almost agitated with doing it. And then they've got to sit back in a bit more of a conservative way of playing. Look, the things that normally stand out from the Irish side is their physicality, for me, is the most underrated part of their game. But you definitely see when a side basically fronts up and makes it hard for them to play, breakdown gets tough. You know, they definitely do have errors in them, uncharacteristic errors, and they don't play on their terms, where they then have to play a bit more conservative. They don't boss the ball. It becomes more of a street fight, and that's where you want them to do that. I think, you know, the Box have got the tools to do that to them. You sort of saw it last year in Paris in that pool game. Yes, ultimately we came up short, but like, you know, the physicality, especially in the beginning from the Box, was next level. And towards the end of it, we obviously had a foothold in the game, deep 22 entry. You know, the ball, was it out, wasn't out? It got blown. We lost by 2 points or whatever. I think we've got the ability to do that again to them. But, you know, you're right, Shimmy. They lose games which you think they enter as favourites, and it means a lot. You know, as I mentioned, they're losing games that is costing them trophies or titles, and that's a worry for them.
They're also very good and very, so you speak about their physicality, but also very good at the breakdown.
Yeah.
Okay? In terms of spoiling when the opposition both has sides, momentum.
Yeah.
But both sides of the breakdown. But also, especially when you get into their 22, you know, just the ability to just slow it down that fraction of a second, and, you know, then only hands off kind of thing. So it's just that little bit that gives the defense opportunity to set.
They got pinned on the weekend for it.
Yes. So sometimes you get it wrong. And I think, Pete O'Mahony got it wrong this weekend.
Yeah.
Again, where he went for it and then just went too far, yellow card. And no doubt that had a massive influence.
But like even that last set, you know, they get a penalty for the exact same infringement in the touch. So, I mean, bloody hard kick to kick for right foot, a right hand touch. Then they obviously work it across the field, and then Tyke Burns sits in there, gets coached away seven times as a penalty right in front. And obviously eventually, you know, they kick the drop goal off the back of it. But there's no ways that Smith was going to miss the one right in front of the pole. So, you know, a lot of infringement. I think when you're playing in a side that wins and you're playing well, it's easy to miss on the small little things where you get away and a little bad habit creeps in. So for Ireland, whatever the bad habits was it during the week or during how you do certain things on the field, you know, this will be a big wake-up call for them.
Scala, I thought England should have been a lot further. I mean, they were behind at halftime.
Yeah.
Considering the first half they had.
44 minutes, they were up 17 points to 8, Ireland.
Yeah, exactly. I thought for the performance that England had put in, Ireland actually did well to hang in there. And then, you know, obviously the second half, there was an implosion. But you mentioned Ben Earl.
Yeah.
Man of the match, deserved it, but probably one of the best games we've seen him play.
No, I think the World Cup was sort of where he came you know, to everyone's front of our mind, thinking like, how good is he? You know, he was busting the tackles, the running stats, tackle stats, offloads, stepping, meters gained for the English side in the World Cup. He was their player of the World Cup, no problem. And then you want him to kick on. And, you know, I remember taking him for a few beers. He was a youngster, and I was sort of mentoring him at Saracens, and, like, just proper talented player. Yeah. And it's taken him, I think, a while to understand his own game. And, you know, he was open side flank, and ironically, I think eight is his best position. He's outstanding.
You think eight, eh?
Yeah, and he's got that nice little bit of explosiveness. Yeah. And I think at number eight, when you've got that, you can play forward, you can play back, you can pop up in wider channels. You don't rev your engine as hard as you do as open side. Open side, you at that first break, then you're at the next.
Doesn't give you the feel.
And you work your socks off. And sometimes I think with an explosive runner like him, you like take away your point of difference. Where at your number eight, where you're not involved as much as open sider, it frees you up to roam around a bit. And, you know, he's been outstanding.
Ford,
yeah,
for the next game,
or Smith.
I was about to say Farrell.
Yeah. We're not getting Farrell back this weekend.
No, so I actually wanted to ask it now. Is, you know, a lot's been said now about Marcus Smith and his performance, and he's been hailed as the year and whatever. Yeah. I thought George Ford had a dangerous ground.
Eh?
Yeah, George Ford had a fantastic game for what was it, 60?
I think they'll keep it the same.
I think it works like that.
Yeah.
When it becomes a little bit more loose, where Marcus Smith can attack more, I think I'll go with George. And he showed in the World Cup as well when they were winning. You know, it was because of him and the way that he was able to control the game. So I'd stick with that.
But tell me, obviously there's a lot of expectation, but a lot of people now, he gets a drop kick, double penalty advantage in front of the sticks. Now Marcus Smith is back.
Yeah.
But did well, though. I must say, he opened it up. But for me, it was more of a team performance rather than...
And his line break prior to that
was pretty good.
I think it's perfectly suited to have both.
Yeah.
Start with George Ford, and when you're chasing the game or when you want to close the game, like the end of it, you can pick, you know, Marcus to come on and do his thing.
I must say, you don't often see an Irish team being, you know, so many clean line breaks against them, eh? You saw quite a few, and it was Ben Orr as well. His explosiveness.
Yeah.
He's got a step, sure.
Yeah, step and acceleration off the line for a big guy. And Marcus Smith, like, he's obviously got that.
It's unusual to, like, the Furbank try, you know, where they go one phase, two phase, pretty scrappy. It's off a long kick exit. One, they get to the edge on the opposite side, the 15, and they do just a basic sweep with a second man play out the back. Jamie George pulls it back. And, you know, it's four against two. It's a 4-on-2. You know, it's sort of just a lack of awareness, you know, overfold maybe. Not the perfect kick exit. But you don't normally associate that with the Irish side. And even if they are short, you know, they, one of the few sides that still use the touchline really well.
Yeah.
And on the weekend, they weren't able to do that.
Their selection on the bench also went against them. So they went for the 6-2.
Mm. Yeah, Gibson Park on the wing.
You know, early.
That's a risk you take.
Yeah,
early injury to
Nash, isn't it?
Calvin Nash. And then
the Munster guy, yeah.
Yeah, Keelan.
I suppose that's the risk you take with a 6-2 split. Guys, another quick
Kieran.
One. Yeah, highlighted halftime, Borthwick and Farrell.
What was said?
I've been trying to find out.
Where are we going here? Like, are you backing Fares or are you backing...
Who are you back?
Fares.
You know both Fares.
I'm going with Big Fares.
Is it?
Yeah. He looks angry, doesn't he?
You never played with him. You did? No,
played against him.
Against him. Big Fares.
And we played against Steve Borthwick as well.
So you back Fares in a Drickers Duplessis.
But obviously the two of them played together.
Yeah. At Saracens.
One's a tight forward, one's a centre.
Yeah. No, you always back the centre.
Well, maybe they
that's
were
what
just,
that's what worries me.
Maybe they were just celebrating an early Easter. I don't know.
I've never seen that. They were going at each other properly at halftime.
Ah.
You didn't
probably
see
had a beer afterwards.
Yeah, they were quite funny about it in the press conference.
Always
afterwards.
Emotions involved. Tight game like that. It's nothing. Just adds to the hype.
Do you guys think that, Skull, I mean, you know obviously more for you. Do you think there'd be such good coaches there from when you played? I think Borthwick used to run the series line-out a lot.
I think Steve especially so. I think, you know, his point of difference when he was playing was exactly that, was just working harder than anyone else, putting in the hours, meticulous about the lineouts. And then, you know, like you often get these players which you think, you know, they're great players. You know, like if you think of him, of Big Fez, you know, rugby league legend, you know, then obviously legend playing for England and Saracens. And you think of those guys as maybe not your stereotypical coaches.
Yeah.
But then you look at a guy like Razor Robinson. You think, you know, when he was a youngster, do you think he's going to be a coach?
Yeah.
You know, he surfs, has a good time. You know, and now he's All Black coach. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, no, shit, Faz is a proper coach and also did his time, you know.
Yeah.
Assistant coaches before he hopped across to Ireland and then eventually became head coach, and his record as a head coach is spectacular.
I think that's where he learned his trade in rugby union, is as a coach rather than a player.
Yeah.
I think as a player, obviously, only a short stint in rugby union and not the impact that he's made as a coach, whereas, you know, started off as a defense coach, was it? And by doing that, you get to learn more about the game and details, and obviously surrounded by other coaches that's been in the game for a long time and being able to snap it quite quickly, it seems, because he's still young, as a coach.
As a coach.
He's got the Lions next.
He's got the Lions. So that's what I was going to say now. You know, to at that age, to now be already a pretty successful coach with Ireland and in the way that they've been playing, and now take the British and Irish Lions to Australia, that's pretty good.
I suppose the big thing for England was winning this game at home, because they've got France next week. And
winning
Lyon.
Is big, you're right, winning is big.
Yeah, no, winning, they needed a win now, because obviously New Zealand next.
Yes.
And that's going to be a hard, considering Razor, he's mentioned them now, a new coach, players trying to prove that. And do you know how hard and difficult it is to win in New Zealand? So this win for England was needed badly.
I saw a stat, they've lost 8 out of their last 20 games, England.
Yeah.
You know, so from that point of view, it's not, you know, it's not great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fiji at home, Argentina.
Your standards need to be higher than that. And now you take on New Zealand, who will be angry after, obviously, the World Cup final loss. New blood with Razor Robinson coming in, there'll be massive pressure on England. And the question should probably be asked, let's say they go, well, they're playing 3 tests, eh?
I think
3 might, or only 2?
I think it's 2. Well, I think it's 2, then it's rugby championship.
You know, if they get smashed in New Zealand, will we still see Borthwick as coach?
I was about to ask while you were busy talking, it was going like, yeah, what does success look like
for them? Yeah.
And do you go there and go like, listen here, let's target one test match and then you try and blood a few extra players? Or I don't think, you know, there's time for like to do that at the moment with where England's at. You've got to go out there and believe that you're going to beat the All Blacks.
Yeah.
And you hope that there's a bit of a transitional period for the All Blacks in that with Razor, you know, maybe, you know, they don't quite get what he's on about. You know, I know there's always a big contingent for them. It's quite a seamless swap, but then you also have to have everyone on the same path. That's why you have, like in South Africa, alignment camps where, you know, it gets told, what's the minimum requirement? What do we need from you? Where do you need to improve? And there's always a bit of a transition period, but like it is hard to go to New Zealand and get a result, let alone if you're low on confidence. But, you know, if England play like they did on the weekend, you know, I think they can put anyone under pressure.
Can they beat France this weekend? That's the way people want to see England play.
I think France is due a nice performance, which is the worry. They're a good side. A couple of players in the beginning, they had a lot of injuries, especially around locks, loose forwards. They're still, I don't think, has got the ability what they had the previous years to put sides away. But, I mean, I don't think they can beat France there this weekend. But like if you're on this trend where you're playing better and you want to do certain things, you want to see the same this week.
Yeah.
So often, you know, if you think about the result, you're going to get into trouble. But if England plays at tempo like they did against the weekend, like the box can do.
Yeah, they'll be confident. They had a good
I think you can put this French side under massive pressure, especially with the long kick return they've got. You know, they kick the thing down there. And if England's got the same ambition that they did with Furbank in the weekend, we saw the 2 tries they score of long kick returns. They can put them under massive pressure, make those forward work.
But it felt as if it was a different French team on the weekend.
Yeah.
something kind of.
Well, they made, look at the selection. They got the right scrum off.
Yeah, but that's the thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Something
Depote is a good 21-year-old.
Brought youngsters in, and suddenly it's just a different feel.
Yeah, it was that temper.
Ramos at 10 even. Yeah. You know, there's just a different temper to the game.
Okay, we'll get to
better.
France. Italy versus Scotland.
Didn't see it coming.
No one did.
No one did. How does Scotland? I mean, this is the same Scottish team that beat England.
Loose, Shimmy. How loose?
They were ahead. They were running away with it.
How loose were they?
Yeah.
Like you. And then not to realize that you are going too loose. You're out of structure. You're giving them opportunities to catch you on their counterattack. Just super loose. And like, I guess, you know, they play with that loose style and tempo and you want to play fast, but surely accuracy is on top of that.
Yeah.
And you want Finn to be mercurial and pull the strings, but not everyone's Finn Russell within that team. Someone's job is to carry it over the gain line, scrum them, maul them, put them under pressure in areas where Italy can't compete. But you can't just run it and let the ball bounce a million times and allow them to pick the ball up, snaffle you on the counter-attack, play out of structure. There's just way too many errors from the Scottish side.
It was something like 21 or 22 unanswered points from Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
They were running. If you watch the first half, you'd never think. You'd probably turn the TV off at halftime and think it's a done deal. 40, 50 points.
Turn your mind back to when they played Wales and it was exactly the same.
Yeah.
They were up at halftime and then conceded how many there in the second half as well.
What's Cusada done well with this Italian team? What's different with them?
I don't know, but he needs to continue.
They're very skillful. They've got a pack that works hard. Look, I think defensively, I thought Scotland towards the end, it was like a captain's practice, how they were passive.
Yeah.
Defensively, just almost watching Scotland play.
They play with massive ambition. We saw it from Benetton in previous seasons, but now you also see it from Zebra. And I think it comes from Kieran Crowley. Like, I mean, don't forget, before they went to the World Cup, they turned over Wales in Cardiff, you know, scoring an absolute worldie in the 80th minute. And like this, they carried on the same. Look, they were allowed on this weekend, to your point, Shimmy, to be on the ball, have time on the ball, run at Scotland, put them under pressure. But also, when a team is hungry like they are, if you start making errors and dropping balls and giving you second bites at the cherry, we've all played against sides where you're probably the better side and you put them away. As soon as you go out of the structure, get loose, make errors, don't stick to your values, your work rate systems. It's so easy for them to catch you on the counter attack. And then all of a sudden it becomes a game. And we've all played in those games. And the issue, if you're Scotland and you try and like force the game with a flyer who wants to force it, then all of a sudden you make more errors. And that errors robs you of anything good that you've got, energy, work rate, intensity. And that's what happened this weekend. And by the end of it, I mean, the Italian side came on stronger than Scotland had.
But it's impressive. You look at the Italian crowd, a full house, for a team that hasn't had a lot of success in the Six Nations. I mean, absolutely packed.
It's good to see that crowd.
Yeah. It was good to see. Yeah. You imagine a Springbok team or any England or whatever team that's lost so many games. People turn around and say, I'm not going to watch this again.
It was impressive.
Yeah.
They should have beaten France.
I just wanted to say the same. It's backed up by their performances.
Yeah.
Against England in round one,
they
very easily could have won that game. Yeah. Very competitive. At home, France, obviously the draw, blown out the water against Ireland. But they've been really competitive. So, you know, that begs the question for this weekend against Wales. You know, what's coming there? Because for Wales, they've 0 out of 4.
Yeah, they could beat Wales.
That's the one I've been worried about, Wales, all along.
Yeah, you mentioned that when you earlier on.
I still got that gut feel this weekend for the Welsh side, actually.
What I want to give credit to the Italian team as well is how they've...
Menoncello.
Not just the midfielders at 10, but like how they've compiled their team. So I think we've seen the influence of foreign-born players on, we've seen it at Ireland, we've seen it at Scotland, we're seeing it at Italy now as well. You know, suddenly guys that's coming in, not Italian-born, but now Italian qualified and being smart about it, knowing that you can select these guys, they've made a massive difference to the team. So, you know, it's being able to be open to that, see where your weaknesses might be and then see how you can fill it. And I think they've done that really well now.
Are Italy where probably Argentina were a couple of years ago? you know, a lot of them playing for Benetton. Mm. It's a young team. They're doing well. They're playing exciting. There's an identity with Italy. If you watch the Italian team play,
yeah.
All
yeah,
those passes, like skillful forwards, hardworking pack.
A tree.
With a little bit of X.
A tree. Agree.
A tree. Oh, a tree.
A tree.
That's a tree.
Oh, okay. A tree.
But I do agree.
Yeah.
But at the lowest standard to Argentina, I would say. You're still not going to see.
Hence a couple of years ago. Yeah.
But even a couple of years ago, Argentina, they were making semifinals.
How many years was a couple of years ago?
Well, 2015, they made semifinals.
Yeah. And before that.
Okay. 2007.
Yeah, 2007, they made semifinals.
But it's good. Look, it's what the competition needed there.
Yes.
Because those days of putting the TV on, Italy are playing, they're going to lose. But they've shown plenty of heart, deserve the win. But Gonzalo Quesada, I must say, look, he's obviously, I think he was at Stade France the day before.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, obviously, with it seems to have found his team.
Yeah.
But John, doesn't it? Okay, now people are going to say Springbok supporters going back to the World Cup.
Wait.
All Blacks beat Italy by 90-something points.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's last year.
It's not that long ago.
Different coach.
Yeah.
Just they play with massive ambition, which I like.
Yeah, they're nice to watch.
So for a while where you couldn't see that ambition in them, so it was almost a set-piece battle. And if, you know, Kashiovani got the hold of his opposite number, they can go set-piece to set-piece and tough it out with you.
Andrea Lo Cicero.
Yeah.
Now they can play some rugby, you know, proper rugby. And it's great to watch. Like the weekend, for all that we want to say Scotland was poor, and they were. I mean, that game was going at a million miles an hour, which is something we haven't seen in the Six Nations up to this weekend. You know, that was proper intensity from the Italian side.
Yeah, so we've also got a game,
Italy versus Wales in Cardiff.
Big game. That's going to be the game of the weekend. Yeah. But Scotland being so far, Scotland threw it away. But also you need the opposition not to just lie down and roll over. So the way that they came back showed a bit of a bit of guts and determination there from the team and being able to execute and get the points on the board. Because that's what we saw at the World Cup against New Zealand. They just gave up.
Yeah.
You don't want to see that.
Wales, I think, lost 11 out of their last 12 Six Nation games. Bottom of the log. They still get a packed Cardiff Farm Park. What did they do? They brought the great redeemer, Warren Gatland, back. The results haven't changed. I think it was Pivac before that. He won one, I think, and then with Alan Wynne-Jones and sort of that generation. He's coming with all these youngsters. They've had their moments, but how do you fix it? Imagine they were touring New Zealand now or coming
here.
Well, we are playing them.
Yeah.
As much as we're saying the Italian sides are on the up, even Zebre looking, you know, a bit more ambitious in the style and the way they play. Benetton's been on it for a while now. We can't say the same about, you know, the URC, the Welsh sides. You know, they just look in a shambles from, you know, administrative point of view. And then also a lot of big players who held down positions for a long, long time has moved on. And they're through a building phase now. And then you've got to ask the questions. Warren Gatland is obviously the messiah of Welsh rugby. Now it's working with the next generation. So you've got to find a new style that these players can identify with. They've got to create their own culture, new players. What is the Welsh style? How do we play? I'm not sure I know what the Welsh system style, what do they want to achieve out of their games. And when you're a young team, it's easy to get up for the big games because you're sitting there thinking, we're playing against Ireland.
Yeah.
Well, we can concede 40, 50 points here. The danger is this weekend's game. And Italy's not flying under the radar because obviously they turned over Scotland. They came very close to beating the French side. But those players won't have the same fear for the Italian players than they would have for the Ireland players. So this weekend's going to be a cracker between those two sides.
The difference between this team, Welsh team, and previous Welsh teams are probably that, and you've mentioned it, I think the administration is in a shambles. The Vodacom URC teams aren't even competing, you know.
Yeah.
They're just not good enough. And also, if you had to select a world team now, which of the Welsh players would even come into consideration, would be part of the conversation in a position?
Yeah.
Name one.
Can't.
And it's harsh, you know, because it is a young team. But, I mean, it's very difficult to find maybe a Tommy Riffle.
Yeah.
You know, probably, yeah, maybe he's the, yeah, I thought of him probably.
You know, but
lots of energy, yeah, from
of the
him.
Others, it's really difficult to find guys that's even part of the conversation. You know, so then you're saying, well, okay, this team needs to compete against some of the best teams in the world.
Yeah.
You need to be realistic about it as well and say, well, okay, they're just not there yet. Maybe in 2, 3, 4 years' time, these players might be the best in the world, but they're certainly not there at the
moment. Like the previous regime with, you know, all the great Welsh players, a lot of experience, they used to just hang tough and rely on their defensive and how competitive their defensive system, how competitive they were at breakdown, kicking battle. You know,
bigger.
And then they live from absolute scraps. You know, you often think like we should be up by 20 points, but they're still within that 3-4 point margin. And when they do get the opportunity, all of a sudden they're in the game and they have some amazing results. This is a new generation. You know, they want to play a different style. You know, whatever they stand for is something different. So you've got to find a style that identifies with the strengths that you've got now, whether that is playing a bit more rugby. I don't know. I haven't seen enough of them to actually know like what's going to suit. What is their style? What's their identity?
So Gatland's got to evolve with them.
He's got to evolve with them. You can't now go and say, listen, this is what had worked, you know, 5, 10 years ago, and you can enforce that style on a younger generation. I don't think you're going to get very far.
France, happy that
France Stein or France Malabar?
France. France, the team coached by Galtier. Look, a result they needed. Several changes made in selection, though. What was your take on the young ones, John? Deporte, the centre. I think he plays for Bordeaux. He's usually outside centre.
I think the youngsters kind of brought that energy that they were lacking. You know, just that World Cup hangover.
Yeah.
Guys that didn't form part of the squad now coming in wanting to prove something, and now suddenly the others that were there, they were like, oh, sure, we need to do our part, otherwise we're not going to be here either. I mean,
the big lock also, is it Miafo?
Yeah.
Did
great
well.
Performance. I mean, I think all the guys that came in, and it, you know, the moving Ramos back to 10, you know, giving a bit of direction there. You know, not having Dante there, but Galfico suddenly, you know, looking better as well again. Damien Penno, suddenly.
Damien Penno's class.
Breaking the line again.
Damien Penno's a quality winner. You talk about World 15.
Yeah. No, he's
His name pops up. He has absolute quality.
He's there. Some and tackles, ability to break tackles. Yeah.
Some finisher him, hey.
Yeah, he's proper quality.
And then the, what's that young scrum off? I mean, he's like.
Is it Nolan Lagerek?
Yeah. And he was freed up, eh? He was chucking the thing out the back there, 30 meter passes. But lucky, I mean, as we always, it doesn't matter how much experience you are, you know, what name you've got. At the end of the form is the key barometer to your team's success. Yeah. You've got to pick players in form.
Lessons learned, though. Obviously, Galtier got that right. A lot of people were saying, you know, we're not mentioning Dupont today.
Huh?
Dupont. Think about it. We're talking about him.
I think he's had enough airtime.
France are missing him. You put this 21-year-old youngster. They get a good result. All of a sudden, we're not talking about him anymore.
This youngster's good.
He's good. Confident.
It's very good.
That little kick over the top, down the left-hand side, down the blind side, then we're in space.
So much of the way that he played was Dupont-like.
Not as strong in the carry, though, but he's confident.
Yes.
He'll just get better and better.
Yeah, I think this weekend will be a big test for the French side against the way that England defend, their line speed. Yeah. You know, like it's... You can't see the French side like if Ireland was on top form this weekend, like the way they unpick defences. Like they're more of a batting ram, this French side, and then they rely on a Fico, you know, breaking the line out of nothing, or Dupont if he was playing. It's going to be hard for 9 and 10 in this weekend. If there's line speed and you hear footsteps and they're coming from that blind side.
Yeah, but that's what I was going to say now. If you're a French team, low on confidence, you're ahead in the game. What do you want the opposition to do? You don't want them to be direct. You don't want them to play territory rugby. You want them to throw the ball around, force them into make. And that's where the Welsh team is at the moment.
Yeah,
you know they're trying to find this new identity, and they were throwing it around and kind of.
And we know from past experience, once the ball's bouncing around, it's not bouncing in your hands. The opposition always gets it.
But the big difference, guys, with the French pack. It's probably, so you got Antonio that carries.
Yeah.
Marchand carries.
Yeah.
Cyril Bailly loves a ball carry. Miafo loves a carry. Yes. even Thibaut Flamand,
yeah,
Olivon,
Aldred,
if he's playing. Yeah. You got guys, every one of them are effective carriers. That's why Dupont can actually carry offloads off them, and you got this line speed. So it's the English sort of who's going to be the more physical.
Yeah.
I think tactically, England are probably a little bit better. I think Ramos probably at 10 probably tries to run the ball a bit too much, which will feed into the defense.
Yeah.
You can feed off the scraps. But I think from a physical point of view, this is going to be, it's going to be a hell of a game.
It's an interesting one to call.
Yeah, it's a difficult one.
You take the one.
A confident English team.
Yeah, the highs of England after that performance, but the French playing at home against the English, 10 o'clock game.
In Lyon.
And if the French is up for one, it's when they play against the English, eh? They always got an extra gear for it.
I mean, what we can probably agree on is that we are probably seeing two teams that have reached the pinnacle of their performance in this year's competition, in France and England. I think they both,
like the previous weekend,
played their best games last weekend. So
both of them hitting a little bit of form facing each other.
Going into the last one.
That pass from Lagarek.
Yes. Oui.
Didn't Zinzan Brook do one of those before?
I'm sure he has.
I've seen it somewhere.
Have you not done it?
No. You never done it? Touch.
I don't think touch. I've never had that one in the locker, boys. No.
But gee, was that's proper confidence, because that's John, you playing there, that's Intercept City all day.
Well, yeah. I'd never throw it. It's probably just the naivety of youth.
Yeah.
Just not thinking about what the...
Never pass blind, never turn blind when you're playing cricket at the run-out's waiting for you. If you're French, it doesn't matter. You just chuck it.
I think it's one of those passes where kids would be watching them playing touch rugby the next day.
Yeah, and
they'd all try it. Remember Grieging and had the goose step with Campbell. Yeah.
Quade Cooper.
The intercept, the Sonny Bill Williams. This is going to go down where kids will probably be trying that on the touch field.
And I mean, it worked out perfectly. If you think about it, it's never really where... If the ball is against the touchline, where the midfield actually pushes up that hard. So that is where the space would be.
So, just to go back to...
go back to where?
Ramos. The answer, the makeshift fly-off. He's played there for Toulouse.
Mm-hmm.
The answer there, 10.
I think on his performance, yeah.
Jean, would you like to play with him inside you?
I like Jalibert.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it's but he's been off, and that's a difficult thing as well, because even with Luku, it was as if the team clicked on the weekend. Now the question is, did they click because it was a change in 9-10?
Yeah,
or was it a collective effort? You know, so if those two guys were there, would it have also been like that, or were they the guys that brought the change?
Yeah. Also the bench. I think Fabian Galtier said he was inspired by the box plan or something to that extent. Where there's 25 unanswered points with the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of the bench coming on. Because the French, I mean, we've mentioned, they do have big forwards.
Yeah, massive
and
forwards.
And they've got a lot of them. I mean, Colombe, the La Rochelle prop that came on on his debut.
Yeah.
Look at the size of that monster.
Yeah. Both of them carrying both of those props.
Yeah.
And then...
Because for me, Wales, Muvaka comes on.
Yeah.
They can only hold out for so long physically. And then you put on sort of a mini bomb squad. Then. Yeah. The damage is done.
I think teams have, in the beginning...
I call them mini.
In the beginning, no one really understood the long kicking game and how to combat it. And, DuPont rule of them creeping. And eventually, you've just lost the gaining grounds. You're in your 22 and you just kick it out, and they've exited over six kicks from their 22 to the halfway. Now, where teams are actually running at them, forcing them to make tackles, getting to run shuttles back and forth... I think England's got opportunity against him, providing, there's no pressure on the high balls, really. So Furbank will catch it, and then, you leave Ben Earl in the backfield and asking them to run at soft shoulders, there'll be lots of meters to be had.
Good weekend of Six Nations rugby.
It was a good
The best one we've seen.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Because of the upset, it was three enjoyable. Good
games. Yeah, I loved
also
it.
Three quality games.
Yeah.
Watch.
Box now, we keep getting this thing around Box joining Six Nations. What are your guys' thoughts? Every week you hear about it.
Yeah.
Should we look? Funny enough, I saw something. I don't know where it was. I think on Instagram, someone talking about the rugby championship of the early 2000s, and how good that was. And the only reason is because Australia were very competitive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it worked then. But Box Six Nations, yes, no.
Well, I think to have a competition where everyone is competitive, that is what makes a good competition, strength versus strength. So Italy's performance in this year's Six Nations, you know, suggests that, okay, the way that it is makes sense. Look, if South Africa ever joins, that will purely be a financial and commercial decision.
We need a strong rugby championship. Stay there.
I mean, does it stay Six Nations or do we go 7 or 8 nations?
Yeah.
Well, it depends how many teams there are.
I know, but like, I mean...
No, but you could take one out and put us
we're taking one out. You're not going to drop the one, surely.
We're
going to add value to there. But like, I don't know. I mean, for the foreseeable future, I don't think there's space for us.
Yeah.
But you never know. Stranger things have happened. Look, no, we're playing in the URC, boys.
But back to that point, John. The competitions where games aren't as predictable is what makes it a great comp.
Yes.
So rugby championship, you take Wallabies, for example, if they're firing on all cylinders, you've got the top three, out of the top five, you've got three teams in there. You don't know what the result is. And, you know, you come to the last weekend and it's very close. That's why I think Robbie Flex said to last weekend, he said he hasn't really been impressed because it was not competitive.
Yeah. It changed.
Maybe he should
change in one weekend.
Maybe Flecky.
They listened to him.
They listened to Robbie. Yeah.
Maybe Flecky should take the credit for the Six Nations.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give it to Flecky.
Flecky, give it to Flecky.
Yeah.
He changed the Six Nations.
He changed the Six Nations.
Changed the Six Nations.
Right in the seat.
Right in the seat next to you.
Yeah. It's
your mentor.
It's difficult to see. I still maintain that I think. If South Africa joins, so if you are selfish about it from a South African point of view, if we join Six Nations and we still play in Rugby Championship, that is the best of both worlds. And but whether that happens, I don't know. And it's also difficult to see if we will then still play Test matches in November.
That's another
thing. The solution is a global season.
100%.
The sooner we get to a global season, the better you can map out a season that suits everyone, is more commercially viable, and that it's a good product that you watch every single weekend that there's an international on the go.
Ireland, Springboks, Durban Test, sold out.
This is our last one, eh? This is our last box sold office.
For a while.
We've got one next week.
Do we have one
next week? Yeah.
How long did it take? Was it 90 minutes?
It was 90 minutes. Gone.
Amazing.
Gone. Sold out. It's going to be a series, boys.
It's going to be incredible.
Serious.
It's going to be a series and a half.
Serious.
Look, in a way, we're all sort of nudging for Ireland to get the Grand Slam. To come to South Africa, then it's a heavyweight.
No, we were calling it on the previous show, saying like it's going to be World Champions versus Six Nations Grand Slam Champions. But it's still going to be
Six Nations Champions.
Six Nations Champions and probably World number one and two going at it.
Does that England result give South Africa more confidence?
I don't think it makes
any difference. Well, it gives you answers. It does make a difference.
I don't think it makes difference to our approach, no.
No difference to the value of the games, the tour. It's still, there's so much to that.
Ireland's our bogey side as South Africans.
When last did we beat?
We don't
it's
have
been
a great,
while, though,
2016, the second test match, but we don't have a great record against them.
Yeah, since about 2004, we don't have a great record against them.
When last did England win in New Zealand?
2003.
Did they do it before the
World Cup? It was before the World Cup.
Steve Thompson,
Martin Johnson and them. I think it was in, it might have been Christchurch or Dunedin, the one there.
No, you're just guessing now. We're just guessing.
Or Auckland.
Somewhere
in New Zealand.
No one wins.
Or New Zealand.
I can tell you now, no one wins in Auckland. No one ever wins in Auckland, boys. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, predictions. Ireland versus Scotland.
Ireland.
France versus England.
Allez le bleu!
I also wanted to go the same way. I'll go France. By one point,
England.
That's going to be tight.
You're going to go England?
I'll go England last week.
Is that why you dressed all in white?
Yeah, I said, it's right. Coming home, boys.
It's coming home. Yeah. It's coming
that's
home.
I've got my French.
Here's the big runs coming. England. I'll go England. Wales versus Italy.
Italy.
Heart says Italy. I just love the attitude, the way they stick at it every week. They're not getting success, but the victories Wales. Eventually come.
Okay.
How do Wales win?
They score more points. I'm going to go Wales.
Eh?
I'm going to go Wales, backed by not a lot.
It's a gut feel.
Yeah, backed by not a lot of facts on what we've seen.
Yeah, home ground advantage,
and because they lost to them last year, was it last year? At home?
Yeah.
Like 2 years ago?
No, it was 2 years ago.
Before the World Cup.
Capuzzo.
Yeah, it didn't actually score the try, but he had the line break and then passed it to the other little winger.
Yeah. I'm going to go Wales. On the same basis, probably.
So which means Ireland win the Six Nations in this weekend?
Yes.
Well, we looked at the numbers. I mean, what was it?
They basically need one log point.
One log point, and they've got a big points difference.
Yeah.
Ireland definitely wins the Six Nations.
Then they come to South Africa. We've spoken about that.
Yes.
But we've got Wales before that.
We do. At Twickenham?
At Twickenham.
It'll be interesting to see.
But that's on the URC final day, the 22nd of June.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting to see what South Africa team plays then. But that's still a long time from here.
Well, it could be. Well, I suppose you look at all the Springbok guys playing outside of URC, the URC competition. You could put a look at the Japanese contingent. You can put a proper side together.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's be honest, it's playoff side. You can pick the Sharks Springboks. They would have had 2 weeks off by then. You were like, you had 3 weeks off by then.
No, well, when the
here goes cup all on? The Sharks. Yeah. Yeah.
Scott, don't go to Durban for the Irish test. Okay. Don't go to Durban for the Irish test.
Even dressed in Sharks colour.
Like, I know.
Anyway, guys, that is it for the box office. Another exciting weekend of Six Nations coming up. We'll be reviewing it next weekend. And we'll see who is going to be the championship of the Six Nations this year. Until then, the box office is now closed.
Thanks, Shemans.
No worries. Thanks, boys.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.